Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
T-Mobile is more than the best network in the game. They're now the best network in America, according to the experts at Ookla Speed Test. So MLB fans are connected from home to home plate with the most advanced 5G, the most towers, and a signal that goes farther than ever. You can keep up with your teams on the road, overseas, and even off the grid. For baseball fans, it's better over here.
Based on analysis by Ookla Speed Test Intelligence data, 1H2025 compatible device and plan required for T-Satellite. See details at T-Mobile.com.
Coming at you live from Auto Trader, here's New Car Energy.
They're searching inventory. You can make a budget for your wallet to help you succeed. It's smarter car shopping just for
Find your next ride at autotrader.com, powered by Auto Intelligence.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Welcome back. Chucky's coming to you live on 106.7 The Fan and the Team 980 here in the DMV. 910 The Fan. 105.1 FM in Richmond. We are streaming live on the free Odyssey app, iHeartRadio, and TuneIn. And you can watch us on the Monumental Sports Network, brought to you by Crop Metcalf. They're the official heating and cooling company of the Junkies. Coming up at 7:45, we talk some college football. Chris Doering from the SEC Network joins us. Talk about the Penn State job, talk about the national championship picture, and more. Mike Loxley, head football coach at the University of Maryland, joins us at 9. But right now, joining us on the Rude Guest Hotline, Rude, the most reliable heating and air conditioning products in DMV, it's Spencer Carberry. He's your head coach of the Washington Capitals, and he's presented by the Centers for Advanced Orthopedics. More physicians, more locations, more advanced care centered around one thing, you. Visit CFAOrtho.com. Good morning, Coach.
Morning, guys.
Hey, Coach Carbs. Before we get into last night, can you recap the quick New York double dip with the wins over the Isles and the Rangers? Pro goes off on the island. He had two goals and an assist in that win. And then the next day, Chucky just goes in and paints a masterpiece at MSG against the Rangers with a 35-save shutout in his season debut. Nice trip to New York.
Yeah, it was a quick trip with it being back-to-back. So getting up to Long Island, I thought we played really well in Long Island in their home opener. Like you said, Pro, couple big plays to finish off some opportunities. So that was good. And then not quite as good in MSG, but tough circumstances, both teams on a back-to-back. MSG is a tough place to play, but we went in there and sort of grinded it out. Chucky, like you said, was phenomenal and held on for the 1-0 win. So that's tough two games going up there and playing back-to-back in New York. So to come out with 4 points there was really, really positive.
Coach Carbs, for those who haven't seen Pro in person on skates, can you describe how big he is? I saw Leno basically was asked, you know, to describe him. He said basically he's built like in a laboratory type of dude.
Yeah.
Like, I remember seeing him the first time on skates. I was like, when I didn't know who he was when he was first coming up,
massive.
I was like, who is that massive human being on skates? The only guy I recall seeing bigger than him was Chara.
Yeah. If I could give the listeners probably the best visual, if you've ever seen the Rocky movies, there was a guy, you know, one of the bad guys in it, Ivan Drago.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yep.
That's what he looks like.
Oh, like, imagine Eastern European, just chiseled, tall. You know, he's got the chin, the whole deal. Like, that's pro. But he's different than Ivan, and he's the nicest young man, great family. you know, just like a quality human being, but he's put together like 6 foot, whatever he is, 4'5" and chiseled and in great shape, looks after himself. And he's got a skill set, like he can skate, he's smart, he's got all the tools. So that's what the guys give him a hard time, that he was built in a laboratory.
Yeah, he's a big dude.
So he's got a younger brother who's also in the Caps organization, Ilya. Are there any other pros on that assembly line, or is it just end with those two?
We're trying to find, but they're not. They're just those two. And that story in itself is crazy. Going back to Vegas, like super quick story. When young pro, we call him little pro, when it was his draft year, it was in Vegas, and I was out there, and big pro came because his brother was going to be drafted, and I went for lunch with him and pro's wife and pro's mom. Pro's dad couldn't make it, but his mom was there and doesn't speak any English. We went for lunch, and she and I didn't know. I have nothing to do with the draft, nothing. So like, I have no idea who we're going to pick. And she said she told Pro to translate. She goes, "Can you tell Coach Carbs, I would really love if you guys would draft my younger son so that they can look after him like they did for you."
Oh, that's nice. That's a good story. And you wound up drafting him.
Coach,
what
did you think about the nice comeback last night? I wasn't able to see it. I'm just kind of watching highlights in the third period. But yeah, what did you think of the call on Ovi, and then they scored on the power play? And
just a couple seconds left on that power play,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, and then you guys come back on another power play to tie it up. But what did you think about that whole sequence?
Yeah, so just to sum it up quick, like, for our start wasn't great. Back on our heels in the first, but second and third, much better. I didn't like the call. I just think it's like an inconsequential call on Ovi in the neutral zone. It has no impact. We didn't gain an advantage. They end up calling it, which, you know, is what it is. And they get a late, like, we did a really good job on the penalty kill, and then they got one last. I think there was like 5 seconds left. They end up getting a high tip. But kudos to our power play because, you know, now you go down 2-1, you're trying to press to get the equalizer. Our power play steps up, gets their first goal of the year, which was huge. Big moment to get the game tied and get it to OT, which OT we was executed to perfection. We won the opening draw and didn't give them the puck back.
Mm. How's that work, like, when you start out? First of all, I don't even know how it works typically, like, between, you know, periods. You get a rough first period. I'm sure you kind of have the same routine, whether you play well or not. But do you always address the team, and for how long, or is that just the guys step up? How does that work?
Yeah, that's a good question. So every single intermission, I won't not go in. So I will go in every single intermission in between the first and second, and okay, I go in at the 8 minutes. So there's a countdown clock in the locker room.
Yeah,
it just basically counts 15 minutes down is what the intermissions are. So once it hits 8, the players know I go in at 8. So everybody, because sometimes they're off doing something, check the tape in their stick, doing whatever,
right,
in the trainer's room. So they know to be back in the locker room, all of them, at the 8-minute mark. And then I have 3 minutes to talk to them. They know right at 5 minutes, like, they start to get moving. So I know I have 3 minutes to make adjustments, talk to them, whatever it might be. That's the time each intermission that I go in.
Are you kicking coolers, or is it always professional? Like, how is that? Like, if you're particularly frustrated.
it depends on the moment and what's going on. You got to be careful. Like, you can't, it's a long season, so you only have so many, I guess, bullets in the chamber to be able to,
right,
to really light a fire. Last night was a little bit. I just felt like, you know, we're happy with where we are record-wise, but we're still fighting the puck a little bit early this year. We've got some guys that are, you know, a little snake bit, and pucks are bouncing on us. And so the execution with the puck and our guys, offensive guys especially, it just hasn't been that great. It wasn't great in the first, but I just felt like our competitiveness against a really good team, a team that's won back-to-back cups a few years, like, it just wasn't even close to there. And so you just got to, you know, bring that to their attention, and then hopefully it changes, which they did. Kudos to them.
Coach Carbs, what a night for Willie. Three-point effort, goal and two assists, including the assist on the overtime game winner to Chicky. He gets to 400 points in his career. Does it in front of John Cooper, Tampa's coach, and the Team Canada head coach as he's vying for a spot on that Canadian Olympic team. Like Stromer said, Willie's the bus driver of this team, and he showed it last night.
Hey, I love how you pointed it out. That is real hockey knowledge right there, knowing that Coop, no one asked that after the game. I was hoping someone was going to say something about Team Canada.
I'm feeling warm and tingly inside from Coach Carbs. Nice. Very nice. I'll take that. Thank you.
Yeah, no one mentioned that last night. I was hoping someone brought that up because I thought the exact same thing. I was really happy for Willie and the night he had because he was so impactful in so many different ways in front of the head coaches of Team Canada. And I said it to our guys after the game, like Willie was dragging guys into the fight last night. We were not good in the first, and his physicality and trying to create energy in the building and for our team and get people excited or his teammates excited about the game and find a way to dig in. Like he was just leading the charge. And then on top of it, he's making plays offensively, like gets the tip. Unbelievable play in overtime. So a bunch of different ways that he just had a huge impact on the game. And hopefully Coop and the rest of the Team Canada brass is taking notice.
I don't know. I think it was the second period, and there were a couple little scraps that broke out at one point. There were two caps in the sin bin, and then there were two of their guys in there. And then Willie, he was on the bench with you guys. He looked like he was going nuts that he wasn't out there. And then after, there was a couple little scraps. I think it was Fairvari. I'm not sure who. But he kept, like, the fights had been broken up, and then he's going up to the Lightning guy. He's pushing him in the back. He's calling the P word repeatedly. I can see this from my vantage point at home. And I'm like, wow, you must have really said something to him. Or I don't know what was going on. Those boys wanted to fight
yesterday.
A lot
of chirping.
Yeah. Well, and that's what, like, we needed a little bit. Because sometimes, you know, the game and it's, you're trying to work your way through. But when that stuff starts to happen, it tells me that we're engaged in the game. We're uh-huh. emotionally into the game. And that, I think, is a positive for our group because it gets us to dig in a little bit. When someone, you know, gets under your skin a little bit, now you're like, all right, I'm going to do something about this tonight, and I'm going to, be able to dig in and find a little extra juice. And I felt like that's what happened last night with Willie leading the charge, and then we start going to the net, and then there's some scrums, and then Ovi's getting grabbed, and then guys are going, hey, what the heck's going on here? So it just, it sort of lights a fire under our group, and you can tell and you can feel the emotional engagement from our group.
So Leno slashes a dude on the top of his skate. The TV broadcast cuts over to you. You're doing what you're doing right now. You were laughing on TV. Usually coaches, you know, like you guys get salty when their guy goes into the penalty box, but were you laughing at the fact that he slashed his skate instead of like the standard glove or forearm slash? Why were you laughing on TV?
Victor Hedman's been in the league for a long, long time.
Yeah.
He's a phenomenal player. I just felt like that was a very good sell job in front of the ref to lift up your leg and like he had a broken foot there and then is out 10 seconds later on the power. I just thought he really did a good job of selling that call right there. And it is what it is. I mean, is it a penalty? He gets him on the top of the foot, but Hedman did a nice job of selling that.
Hey, also, Leno had a goal in the win against the Islanders. He rang the post last night. I feel like he's on the verge of breaking out. And then I see like the hockey film bros on Twitter who are complaining that he's only playing like 10 and a half minutes or 11 minutes per night. Like, how do you assess his development? I'm sure you want to give him more minutes, but like again, it's early in his career here with the Caps.
Yeah, and you have to understand, like, as much as you know, we in the organization, myself as a coach, know Ryan Leonard's a big part of our future. So, like, that is knowledge that I absolutely have. Now, for a young player in this league, it's the best league in the world. It's hard. So Leno, even though he's doing a lot of good things, there's young mistakes every single night, and he's working through them, and he's getting a little bit better, and he'll continue to work on them. But that's just the reality of playing in this league. You have to learn and develop, and it's most guys do it in the AHL. He gets to do it in the NHL because of his talent level and how much we believe in him. And so there's some guys, or majority of guys, are in the AHL taking their licks and developing as a pro. He's doing it in the NHL. And the other thing that is makes it a little bit even more challenging is he's doing it on a team that's expecting to win. Totally different scenario if you're in, you know, City X and you're in a rebuild, and, you know, it's not the end of the world if you lose tonight and tomorrow night and the next night and the next night, because you're in a rebuild. That, you know, you can make mistakes. You can put it in your own net. You can miss coverage because we don't have that luxury. So we're asking him to develop good habits, and we're trying to win every single night. And so I think just people have to understand that there's no rush to this. He's going to continue to work hard. He's going to continue to get opportunity, and we'll continue to work with him.
Was his shot that he took, was that a good take? Wasn't it a breakaway? And I was like, I remember watching that unfold, and I was like, I think he should give that up. And then he just shot it. I don't know. Was that a good take? Do you know what I'm talking about?
Like the one that hit the post?
I can't remember what the result of it was. I just know it didn't bury it. But I think it was a breakaway with two guys. Was it like a 2-on-1 or something?
Hit the post, it's a pretty good shot.
If he hit the post, I stand then fine. Yeah.
So it was from distance, and, yes, and you may have like watched it. Like I just watched it again about 20 minutes ago. I could see how you'd be like, oh, that's a little bit far out. But Leno has an incredible release.
Okay.
And that's one of his strongest attributes as a player is his release, and his shot is like snapshot that you saw last night. Like he can beat goalies. And so anytime he gets into an area, even if it's not as close as you would like, I tell him to shoot the puck, like get it on net.
Got it.
Because, you know, he beat Vasilevskiy. He just hits the post last night.
Isn't that insane, by the way, that does not count as a shot attempt because it hits the post? That's one of the dumbest rules in hockey.
Yeah,
why
haven't they changed that rule?
Well, no. It's a shot attempt.
Okay.
Shot attempt.
It's not a shot on goal.
It's not a shot on goal. But it should be.
I don't understand that. I'll never understand that rationale.
Hey, Coach, real quick, your next game's Friday, Minnesota. Yeah. What are the next couple of days look like for Coach Spencer Carberry? Is it a little lighter? I mean, it's a long season, 82 games, playoffs.
Just starting.
Do you take a day off? What does it look like for you?
No days off, I'm guessing.
So this is kind of our a nice little 2-day break, where today we're going to get a little skills practice, and we'll practice tomorrow. And then we got 3 home games against Western teams, so a little bit different, right? You play Minnesota, Vancouver, Seattle, who we don't see very often and only twice a year. For me, it's pretty much business as usual. Like, we're just here doing our thing, getting prepped for Minnesota, also doing some individual stuff family-wise away from the rink. Nothing too exciting. A couple hockey practices out in Rockville, and that'll be about it.
Oh, you're in my hood.
All right.
Nice.
Yes.
All right, well, enjoy the couple days off, get some rest, and I still can't believe Carbs, you know, I don't even know what time you got home last night. I'm guessing 1 in the morning, and you come on the show, you know, 6 hours later.
He's a grinder. He's in it.
You're unbelievable.
He's the best. Thank you, Coach.
He is paid handsomely to do it.
That's true.
It's a good gig.
I enjoy every minute of it. I love chatting with you guys.
All right, thank you, Coach. Really appreciate it.
Thanks, Coach.
It's Coach Spencer Carberry, Caps coach.
You too, man.
Presented by the Centers for Advanced Orthopedics, more physicians, more locations, more advanced care centered around one thing. You visit CFAOrtho.com.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
T-Mobile is more than the best network in the game. They're now the best network in America, according to the experts at Ookla Speed Test.
so MLB fans are connected from home to home plate. With the most advanced 5G, the most towers, and a signal that goes farther than ever, you can keep up with your teams on the road, overseas, and even off the grid. For baseball fans, it's better over here.
Based on analysis by Ookla Speedtest Intelligence data, 1H2025 compatible device and plan required for T-Satellite. See details at T-Mobile.com.
At Designer Shoe Warehouse, we believe that shoes are an important part of, well,
everything. From first steps to first dates, from all-nighters to all-time personal bests.
From building pillow forts to building a life.
For all the big and small moments that make up your whole world, DSW is there. And we've got just the shoes. Find a shoe for every you from brands you love at brag-worthy prices at your DSW store or DSW.com.
You're tuned into Auto Intelligence, live from Auto Trader, where data, tools, and your preferences sync to make your car shopping smooth.
They're searching inventory.
Oh, yeah.
They find what you need.
They're going to find
it. You can make a budget for your wallet to help you succeed. Pricing is precise and true.
So true.
It's smarter car shopping.
Ooh.
Just for you.
Oh, it's just for you.
Ooh.
Find your next ride at autotrader.com. Powered by Auto Intelligence.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
B. Mitchell Finley, 106.7 The Fan. Big news, Noah Brown to the IR. I don't think that's that big of an issue right now. I think the issues were in December, February, March, when they made those decisions, how they were going to shape the Commanders wide receiver room. Right now, though, I'm really excited to get on the Rude guest hotline. Rude makes the most reliable HVAC products in the DMV, and welcome in Mr. Ken Belson. You can follow Ken at L. Belson, and he's got a new book out that I've actually already started reading. I got an advanced copy. It's called Every Day is Sunday. Ken covers the business of sports for the New York Times and has a new book out, Every Day is Sunday. Ken, what's up, dude? Thanks for making time for us. How you doing, man?
Yeah.
Thanks for joining us. The book is out. Every Day is Sunday. And really, you kind of trace the rise of the NFL into this global superpower and how Jerry Jones and Robert Kraft really were kind of at the wheel of this thing. Can you just kind of let people know how much and how big the NFL has grown?
Oh, my, yeah. During Paul Tagliabue's tenure, which was 1989 to 06, the league's revenue pretty much doubled. And Roger Goodell, over the same period of years, 17 years, well, now 19 years, the league's revenue has tripled. That's in large part not so much to Roger Goodell, but to the owners that came into the league at that time, including Jerry and Robert Kraft, who saw the potential for the NFL's brand overseas. You mentioned gambling came in. That's a big source of revenue now. Of course, the networks. And Jerry Jones particularly gets a shout-out for this. Say what you will about him as an owner, as the Cowboys and the GM. But he was the first to see that the way the league was handling its media was old-fashioned. If you think back to the late 80s and 90s, they used to have CBS had had the NFC and ABC, or ABC had Monday Night Football, and NBC had the AFC package. And that was it. There were only three bidders for three packages. And Jerry came in the early 90s and said, well, why don't we get an auction going, right? It makes sense. Bring a fourth bidder in, and the prices will go up. And that was Fox and Rupert Murdoch and the rest, so-called, history. He outbid CBS. And CBS learned the hard way how hard it was to promote all those programming shows, the Sunday night programs, without football. And, of course, they were out of the Super Bowl loop, all those things. After that point, not just the NFL, but the other leagues took notice. Why don't we have more bidding going on here? And so suddenly the networks were on the other side. They used to make money on football and all the sports programming by selling ads. Suddenly sports became a loss leader. You had to have it. Otherwise your other programming would suffer. So it was really a kind of tectonic shift in how media and the sports world operated. And the NFL was first to kind of recognize that. And if you look at the money now, the media money now, it's more than 50% of their overall revenue, and it just keeps getting bigger. We can talk about streaming and the digital companies getting in, Netflix, Amazon, Google. There's such appetite now for sports, and the NFL set up pretty well to take advantage of it.
Will there ever be a point where it gets too big, too high?
It's a great question. There is a saturation point, right? But I think the NFL has benefited by two things. One is they still have the bulk of their games on the over-the-air free channels. So you don't need a Peacock subscription or Amazon Prime to watch most games, and certainly the Super Bowl is on free TV. So they still reach the biggest audience. But, you know, look, let's face it, there is saturation, right? They do benefit by only having a 256-game schedule. Scarcity is their friend. But as Mark Cuban said, you know, at a certain point, he said this back in 2014, you get a little greedy. Now you're on Thursdays. Now you're on Christmas. Now you're on Black Friday. And at a certain point, the novelty wears off. And certainly when I was a kid, you know, you'd watch the highlights on Saturday of the previous week to get amped up for the following Sunday, the next day. And, you know, there was like drama to it, you know, like, come on, like, give me my fix, you know. And now that fix is all over the place. And as I outline in the book, you know, think about the draft on Thursday night, the ratings they get, the fact that it's a roadshow, it's going to come to your neighborhood in Washington in a couple years. Yeah. The combine, boy, the lead up to the combine. And then my all time favorite is the primetime release of the next year's schedule. guys just reading stuff off a calendar and just saying, oh, we'll watch this anyway. So The NFL knows there's demand out there. But you're right. At a certain point, it's too much. Right. And so I think they're trying to find the balance. It's not easy. They're trying to be a 365 day a year league, but maintain that sort of scarcity.
You're right. Every day of Sunday, they're trying to get them on every game because, like, every year I hear people say, I'm not going to watch the combine, and they have numbers better than the other leagues, like playoff games.
Yep.
You know, it's crazy.
Yeah, no. And, you know, you look at, like, the NBA Finals, the NBA is sort of number two, really, at this point. They get 7 million viewers for an NBA Final. Now, it's not a fair comparison. You got a 7-game series. But even so, I mean, 20 million fans for a mediocre Thursday night football game, it's kind of insane. Even the ratings, and the league loves to tout this, even the ratings for the Hall of Fame game, I mean, talk about a useless exercise, right? And they're still drawing big crowds because people love their football. So, they built this kind of national footprint very cleverly. And people talk about, say, the Steelers and the Packers having, you know, good footprint. But you go to L.A., you'll find a Bills bar. You go to Arizona, you'll find a Bills bar. You'll find a Commanders bar in a lot of big cities. Yeah. Still have an avid fan base. So that's something that's hard to trade in. It's hard to recreate.
Talking with New York Times best-selling author Ken Belson has a new book out called Every Day is Sunday, tracing just the rise of the NFL to just the absolute superpower it is and how big of a role Jerry Jones and Robert Kraft played in that. I'm also curious, Ken, Washington had such a significant change in, I mean, ownership, right? Yeah. Like, Snyder almost killed this organization, and then you get Josh Harris. What was Snyder's role as the NFL kept growing and then more or less eventually threw him out? Like I know you have some pretty juicy nuggets in there about Dan.
Yeah. So Dan's an interesting case. Jerry was always the one pushing the envelope. You know, he was finding money in places the NFL owners didn't even know to look. And that's his genius. You know, you call it what you want, greed, rampant capitalism, whatever it is. Jerry's an ideas guy. He's looking for everything that he could. The title of the chapter on Jerry Jones is, I love to stick that Cowboys peanut butter on everything. You know, he's got the biggest brand, and he's a circus barker, right? Dan comes in, and he immediately aligns with with Jerry. There's theories on why they align so closely, but Dan was all about, at that time, he paid $800 million. That was a record amount. Dan had to pay back his loans. So he was eager for a lot of new cash to come in quickly. He had the biggest stadium. They used to draw, they were the tops in the league, right? They had 93,000, I think, at some point. They were far and away successful. But he went too far. There's been a kind of interesting tension in the league. You know, we know we're going to get our money from the networks, but we don't want to bleed them dry. And there's a scene, I think it's in the book, that I heard from another owner that Dan went into these meetings and said, wait, you're only doubling your media revenue and you know that these guys really need you. Why aren't we trying to triple it? Well, you know, the owners realize they got to live with the networks. They don't want to drive them out of business. So there is a little bit of, I mean, Robert Kraft particularly, hey, let's leave some money on the table. We'll come back next time. And that's not Dan. Dan was, let's take as much as we can now. It's our chance. We're the monopoly here. He also famously is the first owner to charge a visiting team to park their team buses.
Yeah.
He did that. And charge fans to attend training camp sessions. Yeah. Yeah, so, if it wasn't nailed down, he was going to try and get it. And I think that's he was very much out on a limb there. I don't think a lot of owners were that sort of ravenous. But he definitely aligned himself with Jerry in terms of money first.
For sure. How much would you say, like, how does Harris fit into the NFL now? I mean, this is a dude that's, you know, owns teams in other sports. It's not like he's new to pro sports. But what is kind of what is the other owner's reaction to him? How has he fit in so far?
Josh has been, I would say, probably good for the NFL so far. First of all, the team's turned around. That helps. Number two, that he helps. Finally getting a quarterback. But even more than that, like, turning the page on Dan Snyder. That anybody could have come in and helped there, but Josh did it tastefully. He's a local guy. He was understated. He's not out there tapping himself on the back. We've had other owners, Jerry being one of them, that would, you know, get down on the sideline in the fourth quarter and you know, it was partly about them, and Arthur Blank still does it, even all these years later. So I think, you know, he's been happy to be in the background and be a cheerleader when necessary. He brought in an interesting group, Mitch Rales, Magic Johnson, and others to sort of be more of the front people. So he's been great from a business perspective. From a generational perspective, he's interesting, right? You got a lot of, I mean, Jerry and Robert are in their 80s now. Their kids will take over, Stephen Jones and Jonathan Kraft, and that's all fine. But, you know, you lose a little bit when the founder goes, right? It doesn't have the same energy and vitality. Not that Stephen Jones or Jonathan Kraft aren't smart. That's not the issue. It's just their personalities are different. And you have older franchises, the Rooneys and the Maras, the Bidwills, the Hallis family, and the McCaskies in Chicago. They're really just like trustees at this point, right? So you have a new generation of people who think differently about sports teams. And Greg Penner in Denver is one of them, and Josh Harris is another. Jimmy Haslam in Cleveland. They see teams now as assets. I think that's the mindset that has changed now. And that's why we have now private equity money coming in, and we'll probably see more of it in the coming years. And frankly, you know, I can see it from Josh Harris's perspective. Somebody wants to write you a check for 10% of your team and have no control. Well, I'll take that check, you know. And Josh is a $6 billion valuation, right? So that's a big check. Jeffrey Lurie has sold a slice of his team, Stephen Ross in Miami. And Josh was very instrumental in this small committee of figuring out the formula that worked for the NFL. So he's already made his imprint in just a couple of years without having to, you know, stomp on the, you know, take a shoe and bang and get everybody's attention.
What do you think the next team to sell is?
It's up in Seattle. Paul Allen died in 2018. His estate is obligated to sell all of his assets over time. The Blazers, his other sports franchise, has already sold, or hasn't been approved, but it's been sold for well over $4 billion. Wow. His sister, who's really his only sibling, only big family member, he didn't have any kids, she kind of likes being owner, you know, Jody Allen. So she's probably going to sell that thing last. They had some contractual obligations to King County they would have had to, if they had sold before last year, they would have had to turn 10% of the proceeds over to King County in Seattle. So they waited until after 24. We're now in 25. The Blazers are now off the books. So we could see something in 26, 27, where the Seattle changes hands. And you know, Washington went for six. Seattle, with the money up in Seattle, Jeff Bezos, you know, all the tech money, you could easily get an eight number, wow, maybe even more, for a city that's not nearly as big as Washington, D.C. in terms of footprint. But, you know, these are rare assets. There's only a couple of them change hands. We did have a few, right? We had Denver and we had Washington kind of back-to-back. But, you know, they only come around once every half decade or so. And there's going to be a lot of people wanting to get in on that one.
Well, you think Bezos gets the Seahawks?
It's possible. I mean, you know, it's kind of a complicated relationship.
He wanted this one at one point, didn't he?
Yeah, there was talk of it. I don't think he wanted to pay $6 billion.
So he's going to pay eight?
Right, but he'll pay eight. But he'll get a team that's his hometown. You know, it's a lot of co-branding with Amazon. They have the arena up there where the Kraken play. It's the Climate Pledge Arena. It's an Amazon-branded thing. So, you're right. He could have gotten it for six. I guess he felt like the team was in a very different business state at that point. And the other thing is, you know, Josh Harris has to build a new stadium. You know, so Jeff Bezos is thinking, all right, that's six, but then it's another, what, four? So that's 10. I don't know. Does it matter to a guy like Bezos? Maybe not. there could be a lot of reasons why he didn't want it. But in any event, yeah, Bezos could be one. But it's complicated. You have Thursday night football. You have an owner who would be part of broadcasting. So I don't know how they would sort of slice that and, you know, make sure there's no conflicts of interest. And he also has Amazon, the computing company, which does a lot of the statistics for the league. So, but he would be a likely one to line up to buy the team.
The Giants, I think, are really interesting. I think for a long time, the Giants being in New York, their relationship with Park Avenue and the NFL the NFL headquarters, the Giants kind of ran the league. And I think that has changed a lot over the years. Now you've got this news, John Mara's sick. You know, I know there's a lot of Maras, and you've got the other family. I can only imagine what the Giants would be valued at. I mean, it's New York.
Yeah.
It's one of the biggest brands in sports.
Yeah, yeah.
What is like, not today or tomorrow, but what does the Giants organization look like 5-10 years from now?
Well, John's very much the leader, but he's got siblings, and I believe his son is working in the front office. I don't see it leaving the team or leaving the family. They've only got 50%. The Tisch family owns the others.
Yeah.
Yeah, Steve Tisch and Jonathan Tisch works at the team in the finance department. They, you know, for a 50-50 split, there have been many examples where people are at each other's throats. This is one of the good stories. The families get along very well. They're in no rush to sell. They have, you know, large families on both sides. So I don't see them changing hands. I don't think John Mara wants to leave, and I don't believe he's that sick. I mean, knock on wood, I hope he's all right. But and he's one of the real kind of heart and souls of the league. I'll give you one little anecdote. It's in the book, and we were talking a little bit about saturation. You know, a couple of years ago at one of the owners' meetings, they were taking a vote on flexing Thursday night games. You know, they thought the Bengals-Browns game was going to be great in Week 15. Man, it's a bit of a dud, so can we flex in a different game? John Mara was the only owner to speak publicly against this. And he actually texted a whole bunch of people and said, meet me in the lobby, I got something to say. And this is while the owners were voting. The vote failed, but he spoke out publicly and he said, you know, we got a lot of fans who are season ticket holders all around the country. They get that schedule. They buy their tickets, their plane tickets, their hotels, and they come in knowing that week 15 is a Sunday at 1 p.m. game. And now we're going to tell them 2 weeks before it's now a Thursday night game. What are we doing to our fans, our most loyal customers? He was the only one to say it. Now, Roger Goodell reading the winds and knowing how the room works, he gathered enough votes, and the next meeting it passed anyway. But it says a lot about John that he still thinks about the people who are out there tailgating, You know, it's just not fair to your quote unquote customers. And these are the real customers, the people that put up money for PSLs and come out every year. You know, they had, for a while they had 100,000 people on their waiting list, you know. So he's one of those rare owners that still is willing to do that and say that when the other owners are like, sure, you want to put a better matchup on Prime on week 15, I'll go for it. What the heck? So yeah, he's still kind of the heart and soul of the owners in that way.
In other words, as long as I'm getting paid, just get it done.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
I was at those owner meetings when that was a pretty tough vote, and Mara was
I remember seeing you there. Yep. Yep.
Well, and then the way the owners handled it, they just tabled it and then voted for it the next time. You know what I mean? Like, there's a clear changing of the guard in the NFL, and it used to be the Maras and the Rooneys forever, and now it's kind of the Jerry disciples. Last thing for me, the Colts and the Titans are really interesting, where the patriarchs have passed. You now have the daughters in each case running those teams. I'm trying to read tea leaves. That Nashville organization, once they get that new stadium built, they start hosting Super Bowls. Nashville's obviously a great city. The valuation on that thing is going to go through the roof. Indy is really well set up. I mean, the stadium's awesome. Could you see either of those teams get sold?
You know, I heard that the three daughters for Jim Irsay say they're very much into it and they want to stay. But, you know, somebody's going to make an offer, right? Right. You know, yes, they grew up with their dad's team, but there was nobody more passionate than Jim Irsay. I mean, he was singing, you know, rock and roll songs on Twitter before games. So, you know, there was nobody like that. And I'm sure his daughters love it, but in 5 years...
That.
Yeah, yeah, and he played football, you know, he was one of a kind in that way. He was also the first guy to call out Dan Snyder and the other owners, so, yes. Yeah, he spoke his mind. I kind of miss him. He was a rare bird who didn't mind saying what was on his mind. But yeah, they could get an offer and sell. You know, Amy Strunk, boy, they had a lot of family problems there. They had siblings. They couldn't agree. They had to buy one out. And but they do have that stadium, and they got a lot of public money to do it. And Nashville's a great town for a party. And they had the draft there a bunch of years ago. Music, Broadway, the whole scene there is made for a Super Bowl at some point. I don't know what her love of the team is. And, you know, she's not a very vocal owner. But, you know, nobody's going to force her out as long as the team's performing okay. And I'm not talking on the field. You can't control that. But as long as it's making money and not dragging the league down. So, yeah, that new stadium, I've seen the design of it. It looks very nice, and it's very walkable. It's not Landover. But when you guys get your new stadium, I think it's going to be a winner because people could just, you know, hop on the Metro and get there quick. And you're going to have the skyline to look at. There'll be a lot of benefits to it.
Absolutely. Ken, we got to break.
Appreciate you, man.
Thank you for the time. Congrats on the new book. Everybody go check out Every Day is Sunday. Thank you, Ken.
All right. Pleasure.
All right, man. Take care.
Ken Belson, New York Times author, New York Times reporter, best-selling author, new book, Every Day is Sunday. When we come back, let's go around the NFL. I want to talk about this PFF thing. Plus, Noah Brown's on the IR. Maybe we open the phones up. Nobody go anywhere.
Three highest go-to. Number one, McNichols. He was fantastic, especially blitz pickup time after time. He was tracking linebackers across multiple offensive linemen to pick them up. And
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
T-Mobile is more than the best network in the game. They're now the best network in America, according to the experts at Ookla Speed Test. So MLB fans are connected from home to home plate. With the most advanced 5G, the most towers, and a signal that goes farther than ever, you can keep up with your teams on the road, overseas, and even off the grid. For baseball fans, it's better over here.
Based on analysis by Ookla Speed Test Intelligence Data, 1H2025 compatible device and plan required for T-Satellite. See details at T-Mobile.com.
Come to DSW for the shoes, stay for the fun. Because, let's be honest, if shoe shopping isn't fun, are you even doing it right? So go ahead, try something new. Try something different. Good different. Try something that feels like you. You know, the real you. And then definitely brag about it later. Because at DSW, you've got unlimited freedom to play. Find the shoes that get you at prices that get your budget at DSW stores or at DSW.com. Let us surprise you.
Coming at you live from Auto Trader, here's New Car Energy.
They're searching inventory. You can make a budget for your wallet to help you succeed. It's smarter car shopping just
for
you.
Find your next ride at AutoTrader.com, powered by Auto Intelligence.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
He was stoning him when he did. You mentioned the big third down. That was a huge play in the game where he had to get most of it on his own and then finish off the run to get the first down. And I even dinged him for his drop pass on the other third down. I don't think it was going to be a big play, but he still got dinged for it. So he was really solid for me offensively, and he led the way. Number two is, I'm a broken record here, Chris Paul, another solid game by him. He's the best lineman on the field each week for Washington. And then Bjotic came in third. Those are my top three. And Bjotic has been playing really solid too. And now I'll transition here to the three lowest, and I'll save for that. So the three lowest go to Chris Moore. Not only from the drop pass, so it should have been a first down, but blocking, he didn't help out a lot at all. A couple times he was asked to set the edge, and he was the reason the play didn't work. So he was getting dinged on those plays. Connerly, not his best game, not his worst game, but he's in the bottom three, Connerly Jr. And then Wiley, by far the worst player on the field offensively. And that's back-to-back games. He's been on the bottom for me. I forget the all-world guard that you say you have coming back. Maybe for Washington,
Sam Cosmi, hopefully, yeah.
Yeah, so you need – is there – when could he be coming back? Because they need to insert him.
It could be this week. It could be this week. You know, he's in that 21-day where you've got the opportunity to, you know, activate him.
Okay.
He tore his ACL in the playoff game against the Lions last year.
Okay. I didn't know.
So that's right. Basically the normal recovery is late September, early October. So here we are. But yes. Gotcha. And by the way, his position is right guard. So.
You need him.
Yeah. So that's. Yeah. There's been some question among some of the people that cover the team. Will he come in for Paul or will he come in for Wiley?
Oh, he's not coming in. He is not coming in for Paul. Yeah. If he comes in for Paul, I have lost all faith and trust in anybody that knows anything about football over there.
Okay, yeah.
I don't know how obvious I can say it. He's your best lineman on the field. Tunzel's a close second. Or no, I'd say Bjotic is second. Tunzel's the third if I'm ranking him. But Chris Paul does not mess up, and he mauls guys consistently. He better not leave the field or stop watching the game.
You know, you were the first one you did. You're like, this dude Allegretti and this dude Brandon Coleman, they might need to sit. And they ended up sitting the following week. And Brandon
Coleman. So Wiley's been so bad the last 2 weeks. Yeah. Maybe they bring Allegretti back in.
Yeah, maybe, because Coleman's been just flat out inactive. He hasn't been active on game days. Allegretti has been, I think, active on most of these game days.
Well, you can say this with complete confidence that he's going in at right guard when he comes back, or Wiley. He is not coming in for Paul.
So the Chris Moore thing is interesting to me, although the touchdown catch, it wasn't a clean catch. It was a perfect ball, and he really kind of caught it, and he's lucky he held on to it. But he did do a good job of getting the knee down.
Yeah, and I gave him points for it. He gets credit for it. I did not give him the points he should earn for that play. It's a good play. It's a good catch. He just was not a factor and not in the run game the rest of the way. And then the drop, I give the same score there for the touchdown and the drop, because you don't know you're going to get the fourth down the next play. So essentially, and I say this on the broadcast when I'm doing Marin all the time, a third down drop to me is a turnover. You're punting the ball now. Yeah. So because you dropped the ball and you didn't get the first down, I consider it a turnover. I think it should be a stat. It's not a pick. It's not a fumble. But it is a turnover because you're giving the ball back. So for the same points you got for the touchdown, they get erased for the third down drop, and then he just had some other bad.
Well, then I know what's coming on defense because Quan Martin basically turned the ball over by not tackling Swift on the 55-yard touchdown. But we'll get to that in a moment. I wanted to ask you about Zach Ertz because you have basically, since you started doing this, you are not an Ertz guy. It's very clear that you're not, or you know, based on the games that he's played so far, what did you think of his game Monday night?
He's not in my bottom three.
Yeah, no, he's not.
I'll tell you what I thought. Yeah, so he did great. He was one of, well, I wouldn't say great, but he is, let's see. I mean, he's just under the top three, and it's because he made plays in the passing game. He wasn't asked to do much from a block. Actually, I highlighted this. The play right before the Jaden pick.
Okay.
Let's see. I don't have that time stamp.
It's first quarter. It is 6:17. The play before, is 6:50.
Yeah, so this is the most aggressive Ertz has been all year in run blocking. He cuts this guy as he comes across the line of scrimmage.
Yep.
Watch this.
Yeah.
He has to. He's asking, you have to block this guy. He's a DN. I know you don't want to do it, but you have to. He goes low and he chops his leg up. Now, does this guy still technically get in on the tackle? Yeah.
You think he's just not really interested at this age in doing a lot of blocking?
Oh, 100%.
Yeah.
He doesn't want to do it. This is the only probably plus grade I've given him on a run play all season.
Right.
And I gave it to him. I mean, he gets credit. I'm asking a lot of you to come across and take on a D end, and he does it, and he gets him on the ground. That's a successful block if I get you on the ground.
What did you
think? Let's give him his props there.
Yeah. What did you think of Kroski Merritt? What did you think of Bill in this game?
I think Bill's still Bill. I'm not ready to hand the keys to him, just like I wasn't ready to hand the keys to him after the Chargers game. I'm a big fan of McNichols. And he's growing on me more and more. Bill's coming along. He's pass protection's getting better. He had one that was his fault where the pocket broke down, but he's also standing up too. I got no issues with Bill. I'm just not ready to give him the keys. I think McNichols still earn some touches, and I think you've seen it. He's got big third down potential. He's the last 2 weeks getting first downs, and it's not just that. His pass blocking, his blitz pickup is better. It's really good, actually. Got good hands other than the drop, and I think he's got some shake in him, too. It's just a different kind of shake.
Yeah.
So I'm fine with Bill coming along. I'm all for it. I mean, he looks good, but don't stop giving the ball to McNichols. Just don't stop giving him reps. Now, I did make this other note. This is your second time fumbling, Bill, in back-to-back week. Coaches do to this. You know, coaches just rewind that film and then say, this guy's a fumbler, rewinds it. This guy's a fumbler, rewind it. This guy's a fumbler, and they'll just repeat that. And now the defenses each week are now going to think, and it's just going to be part of their tackling, is they're going to think Bill's a fumbler. So you got to overcome that, because once defenses smell that blood, then they're going to come after it. So he's going to have to do a good job of figuring out how to not fumble again and try to erase that narrative that he has now.
All right. Defensive top three, bottom three.
Top three defense go to Kinlaw, Luvu, and Darnell Savage. Played well. I was a fan of him. And then Armstrong, honorable mention. He's right there. They're basically the same score. But those are my top three. Bottom three go to Wagner, just caught too much in pass coverage and out in space and not getting it done. But he made up for it a little bit in the run game here and there, so he kind of bounces out, but he's still my bottom three. Preston Smith, he's just nothing out there right now, so he's got to be in there. And then by far with Sanders still, and it's just from all the mistakes in man coverage and not covering, getting lost in coverage. I dinged him for dropping that interception. I mean, that interception was the easiest one he's probably going to have all season. And he drops it down there on the goal line. The one he caught last week was much more difficult.
Right.
So you got to make that play, because that's points coming off the board if you make that play. And he's just a liability in man coverage. So he rounds out the bottom.
Sanders still the lowest graded defensive player and the lowest graded offensive player was Wiley. Man, you like McNichols. By the way, they love McNichols.
I do like him.
They love him.
I like him. Oh, yeah. Good.
And I think it's one of the, well, I mean, look, Bill ended up getting 17 carries in this game, which is the most for him. But that fumble, it's a good hit by Sweat to knock it out. But to your point,
yeah,
they're going to be searching
yep.
for it now.
Yes,
all right. What else that I haven't asked you about or you haven't mentioned?
I think we got it, man. Covered it. They need to get Terry back. They need to find a way to get more dynamic on the edge with winning man coverage, or they're just going to be, this is going to be too much on Jalen moving forward the rest of the season. If they have another game like this where the run game isn't taking up chunk yardage like it was.
Oh, by the way, I thought because of that egregious missed tackle on Swift on the 55-yard touchdown pass that Martin was going to be a bottom threer for you.
Yeah. Well, I mean, he got dinged on it for sure. I gave him the equivalent of giving up a touchdown because he did. Now, he gets picked again, too. It's just,
I don't know why. He did get
picked. I don't know why him and Lattimore just they can't stay out of each other's way.
I know.
Crazy.
All right. Great job on short turnaround. Appreciate it so
much, man.
We'll talk next week.
All right. Thanks, Kevin.
Welcome back. Chucky's coming to you live on 106.7 The Fan and the Team 980. We'll get back into Commanders Cowboys at 9 o'clock. Scott Abraham from ABC7 will join us. We can get his view on what's going on with all the injuries, everybody who's not practicing, because he's at the park every day.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe you get some optimism, EB.
I mean, maybe Terry miraculously comes back. Maybe.
All right, but let's talk a little puck. Joining us on the Rude Guest Hotline, Rude, the most reliable heating and air conditioning products in DMV. It's Brandon DeHame, Caps winger. What's going on, Dewey?
Not much. Just about to take pregame skate here and prep for a big one tonight.
Big one in more ways than one. You guys are debuting the Screaming Eagle red jersey. Now, I'm a dork fanboy.
You think he was even aware of that?
100%.
Yes, he knows.
Has to know.
I don't know, man.
Yeah, we got it. We got the red helmets. We had to break them in, so they gave us a heads up.
Does it phase you at all when you guys are rocking a new sweater, or is it just like, okay, this is what we're wearing out on the ice tonight?
No, same thing. I think it's pretty cool to see like the old jerseys come back and kind of see the culture of the team and the history of the team as well. So it's pretty cool to wear them.
Do you have a favorite jersey in all your years of playing, even maybe youth hockey, or where you're playing for Tri-City
it's like
Storm, or you're playing for Providence?
Yeah.
What's your favorite all-time jersey?
I think it's the Caps, like the white jersey. It had the stars down the arms. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure exactly which what year they had them, but
that's like the
cool.
OG Caps white white sweater. One, yeah. From way back in the day, from the 70s into the early 80s. It's a good one.
That's
what's
back
the
when
worst
Dennis
jersey?
Maruk was playing.
What's the worst jersey you ever had?
Oh man.
Chicago Steel?
Yeah, no, those weren't too bad. Maybe Tri-City Storm, we had like purple jerseys. I don't know, they were a little bit different, but ended up working out for us, so it was all good.
So what's it like in between periods? You know, I know the last one, I'm sure you guys were frustrated after the first period, right? And then you guys kind of go on, you take care of business. Does Carbs come in there? I asked him this. He says you can't really do that very often. You can't go to the but is he in there kicking coolers and screaming and hollering this early in the season? Or what are those intermissions like?
I think our leadership kind of takes over when in those situations. And I think the good thing about our group is that everyone's so mature and we all understand like, hey, listen, that's not our game. That's not how we play. And everyone knows it. And then, you know, our leadership group kind of takes over and kind of resets us. And, you know, obviously we put on a better second and third last match.
Right. But it doesn't come from the coaching staff then generally. It comes from you guys.
It could come from the coaching staff, like Carb said, it doesn't happen that often, but
right.
In the rare cases that it does, it's not very fun to be a part of those ones.
Yeah.
Hey, Dewey, I make way too big of a deal out of revenge games when players face their former teams. Like, do you feel any of that with Minnesota coming into the building? This is a team that drafted you back in 2016, or is it just positive vibes for the team that gave you a crack at it back in the day?
Yeah, a little bit of both. Obviously, you're grateful for, you know, them starting your career and giving you a chance, and, you know, a lot of those guys over there. But, you know, come puck drop, there's no friends, and, you know, you definitely want those 2 points and, you know, bragging rights over your buddies.
So how do you feel about the start, 3-1? How do you feel the team's playing?
I feel like we're doing pretty good. I think we're trending in the right direction. Obviously not where we want to be. You know, there's definitely some areas that we want to clean up, but, you know, for the most part, you can't really complain about a 3-1 start.
Yeah, I'm sure that you guys have broken this down in your film sessions, but this Wild team, they're the top power play team in the league right now. Look, there's only been three or four games played by a lot of these teams, but they're converting on 47.6% of their power plays at this point. So, like, what do you do when you've got that such a high power team coming into your building that you know converts like that when they have the man advantage?
I think staying out of the box would probably be key. Obviously, they have, you know, special players, but, you know, odds are we're probably going to take a couple penalties. That's just the way of the game. And just being sharp and attention to detail, getting our clears and, you know, covering, you know, going over the film and kind of seeing their tendencies is going to be important for us.
I feel like this could be an offensive breakout for you guys because the Wild have given up 15 goals in 4 games. And you guys have only scored 9, and even though you're 3-1, you really haven't put up that 4 or 5 game yet, goal game yet. So I feel like this could be an offensive breakout.
Yeah, I think we're getting our opportunities, and in that sense, is, you know, we might not be scoring too much, but you know, the underlying numbers for us is pretty good, and we're getting, you know, good shots, good opportunities, and you know, just the pucks will fall for us eventually.
By the way, in the Tampa game, really nice feed from Mikey to Pro to set up one of the goals in that win. I was unaware of this hockey term. Maybe you can fill us in on it. I didn't know what a twister pass was. Is that like a common like hockey phrase, hockey lingo that I've been sleeping on all these years?
What did you call it? A twister pass?
Twister pass.
Who said that?
I read it on Russian Machine Never Breaks. They give good
break. You know,
have you ever heard of that?
Yeah. I have not. That would be a first for me. Maybe like a spinorama pass is probably what we would call it.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
It made me laugh when
Pro said the pass was so good that his mom could have scored on that.
Is that what he said?
Yeah, it's pretty good. It's a pretty good line.
Yeah, it was a really nice look, really special play by Mikey, and having the awareness to send it back the other way and keeping an eye on the goalie the whole time is pretty special.
It's nice to go up to New York and back to backs and take care of business like you guys did against the Isles and Rangers.
For sure. You know, obviously those are pretty big rivalry games, and to take both those games was a step in the right direction for us.
Hey, do you ever get any chance? We talked to you about your spear fishing pursuits out of you know, when you're not playing for the Capitals. Do you get to do that at all in season? Because I was looking at your schedule, and it looks like the next time you'd have an opportunity to do that is on the road trip to Tampa, November 8th. So, like, when the other guys are peeling off to play golf, like, do you get into your spearfishing bit when you get back to Florida?
No, not too much. No, honestly, not at all during the season. But, you know, that all-star break, you know, plan is to go home. So hopefully I can get in some good spearfishing in that time.
Are you getting some hits on your YouTube site? Is it ramped up a little bit?
A little bit. I think we got almost 1,000 subscribers and
some
pretty good views on it. So, I the plan is to keep winning hockey games, and then, you know, we'll post videos along the way.
All right. So you already got some banked. He's got videos banked.
It's good.
Yeah. I got a few tucked away where we can get them out.
Hey, Dewey, nice. I saw the Caps social media team, you know, they had the mic out and they were interviewing players as they were hitting the ice. The scary movie that scarred you as a child, and I saw that yours is a great one, the original Halloween. I was a little bit disappointed, though, in your teammate, Chicky. He basically said, I'm not into scary movies. I think his quote was, I think they're bad, or I think they're bad.
They're
for
bad
you.
For you?
I think that's basically what he said.
Yeah, I don't know, man. He's one of a kind, so I would love
better
to.
Better than Halloween. There's nothing better than
the
original.
You got to grab Chicky on the next road trip, hopefully before Halloween, and just sit him down and just watch the original Halloween with him. Make him watch the movie.
Yeah. I'm sure he'd be terrified, to be honest with you. Yeah. Have to hold his hand the whole time, probably.
He probably should be.
Yeah. All right, well, go out and get that win. Get 2 points tonight against Minnesota, bro.
Sounds good. Appreciate you guys having me. All right.
Thank you, buddy. Appreciate it, man.
It's Brandon Dehame.
What
from
time?
Your Washington
time
Capitals.
Would it be? 7? Probably 7 o'clock puck drop.
All right.
From DC.
I'll be tuning in.
I think you should. I think you should watch.
I feel like I'm going to be out in Lurch's Hood, actually, this evening. We had a big high school volleyball match.
You can watch it on your phone.
That way. Yeah, that's true.
You can watch the live action. You can watch the Caps on your phone.
Yep. What time is traffic?
That is a 7, that is a 7 o'clock.
What time is traffic heading out to the Ashburn area? What time does it really start to pick up?
Now
2 o'clock? Every second of the day.
Right, I mean, I know there's always traffic, but I mean. Yeah.
3 o'clock.
Yeah.
Maybe even 2:45.
I'm going to meet out there around 4:30. So if I'm going to meet someone out there for like some appetizers, maybe a little small meal, maybe
which
a
spot?
Drink.
Ashburn?
Just out in that area.
I would leave an hour in advance.
At least an hour.
Minimum.
I was thinking I was leaving at 3 to meet at 4:30.
3, mm-hmm. I think that's perfect.
Yeah, you'll be fine.
It's just, that is what it is.
If you leave at 3, I mean, you'll probably get there by 4.
It'll be stop and go on the Beltway, but you know, deal with it all the time.
Once you get to the toll road, you're good to go.
It's a nightmare.
Yeah, I know.
Toll road, Greenway.
Is it getting any better around tolls. That? Is it getting a little better around that Tyson's area or no? As it's progressed?
I mean, I don't see it, but I'm rarely on the Beltway now. I avoid it like the plague.
Right.
But I can't imagine it is. Maybe a little bit.
Man, I feel like it's getting slightly better.
Yeah.
Coming up next on a Football Friday, we'll check in with Scott Abraham, ABC7 sports director and anchor. He's at the park every day. We'll give you an update on Debo Samuel, on Terry McLaurin, on Dorrance Armstrong, and more. That's next here on the Junkies.
The stretch run of Grant and Danny from Caddies in Bethesda. What are you doing to protect your family's assets? The exclusive sponsor of our show is the law firm, Kendori and Murrah. They will help you to draft the last will and testament, set up a living trust, or put together a medical power of attorney. Please, if you need any of those things done, schedule a consultation for free with one of their attorneys. You can do that at kmlawyers.com. Tell them we sent you. They'll take great care of you, and they'll give you a discount. That's kmlawyers.com. I sent my parents, sent my in-laws their way. They are good eggs. They're big DC sports fans. Here's how cool they are. They have given us some games from their allotment of Caps tickets this year for our own enjoyment. Pretty sweet. I sent Ryan and Toby to a game last week in the KM seats. So they're just good dudes. They look out for the show. They're really, really awesome to us. We appreciate it.
These are great people. We are going to Kansas City in less than a couple of weeks, my friend, to watch Monday Night Foosball.
Speaking of Kansas City, the NFL, and all things Commanders, let's talk about the National with Sam Monson, who joins us now, good friend of the program we've had on for many, many years. You see and hear his work via the 33rd Team. Sam, we appreciate you hopping aboard. Thank you for making the program a priority today.
I know
you're busy. How are you?
Yeah, I'm doing well. How about you guys?
We're chilling, but the Commanders are dropping like flies, and they're playing a gotta-have-it game. They're 3-3. They got a gauntlet coming up after the Cowboys, Chiefs and Arrowhead, and then the Seahawks and Lions at home. So it kind of feels like a pendulum swinger for them. What are your thoughts on the importance of this game for Washington?
Yeah, it's an important game. They did a good job keeping things going while Jaden Daniels was hurt and Marcus Mariota was steering the ship. And this is a good football team. It's a team that should be capable of challenging in the NFC. But Dallas, you know, they're a dangerous team as well. They're a very strange team. Like, their offense is playing extremely well despite an offensive line that looks like it should be a real problem. And then the defense is one of the worst defenses in history through the first 6 weeks of the season. So it kind of feels like it's a shootout with everything on the line.
How is this defense, talking about Washington's, this bad, especially against the pass? I didn't think it'd be a juggernaut. I didn't think this was the 85 Bears, the 2000 Ravens, or something like that. But this just feels like they're overmatched every week and guys are running wild and free.
Yeah, I mean, I think part of the problem is definitely a personnel issue. You know, since they traded away those edge rushers a couple of years ago, they haven't done a great job of restocking that area of the team, and it's still a weakness. And it's sort of teamed with, you know, the other area of weakness is the back end and those corners that are either young or
maybe over the hill or just sort of too beat up with injuries, and then Mike Sandersill, like he's the one guy who's kind of back there trying to do everything by himself. So it sort of makes sense that this would be a weakness of the team and somewhere they'd be struggling with. But yeah, they're definitely down bad trying to mitigate the damage.
So if you're Cliff Kingsbury, what would your plan be? This is a dreadful Cowboys defense, but you got no Terry McLaurin, you got no Noah Brown. There's a chance Debo doesn't play, and if he does, he might be compromised. He was a shell of himself on Monday night against the Bears dealing with a heel problem. What's your mindset going into this game on the road indoors?
Yeah, I mean, you definitely want to run the ball. Dallas is better against the run than they are in the past game, but they're still not good. So I think, you know, Bill Kroski, Merritt, I think the run game can have a lot of success, Jaden Daniels as well. And then you just got to try and make it work in the passing game with the weapons you've got left. And this Dallas passing game is utterly atrocious. I mean, they are dropping coverage everywhere. There's coverage busts all over the place. You know, even with an extremely banged-up receiving core, I think they should still be able to have some success in that area.
Sam Monson with us here on Grant and Danny. So this division, Philadelphia, you know, started off like doing Philadelphia things where they're winning games that maybe they shouldn't have. But, you know, you give them credit for that. But at the same time, you go, yeah, maybe they're vulnerable. Now they've lost a couple of straight. How do you view the NFC East right now?
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of wide open. Philadelphia is the big X factor because we don't know how that's going to go. And, with a lot of teams, you know, Buffalo is kind of going through the same thing. With teams like that, you go, well, we know they're good. We've seen them be better than this. This is just a blip in the road, and they'll get it back on track. Philadelphia is different, though, because we've seen that the worst case this blip is it implodes. And we've seen them completely blow up before in 2023, and, you know, the entire season sort of tanked, and everybody almost got fired at the end of that year. So you'd like to think, from a Philadelphia perspective, that this is just a blip, and they could put it together, and there's too much talent for this team to not be one of the best teams in the NFC at the end of the season. But I think everybody is aware that, unlike other teams, the worst-case scenario for the Eagles is a lot worse than that. And I think they're under a lot of pressure now to try and sort of put it back together quickly and make sure that it doesn't spiral out of control.
For the rest of the division, and Sam Monson's our guest here on Grant and Danny, it feels like the Giants have figured something out. The Jackson Dart gives them a much better chance. They're certainly a more entertaining watch. I mean, what do you make of them for the rest of the way as kind of a thorn in people's sides? And is this Cam Scataboo thing sustainable? Or, you know, in 10 weeks you're going to be like, how cool was that when he had a couple of fun games?
I think the Scataboo thing's for real. I mean, he was a special player in college. I really liked him as a draft prospect. I thought he was going to be a really good NFL player. Once he landed with the Giants, I thought it was a good spot for him as well. So, yeah, I think he's definitely going to be an important player for them going forward. Jackson Dart just got off the back of a spectacular game. I expect him to struggle a lot more this week just because of the opponent that he's going up against. But his scrambling looks like it's a real problem for teams to deal with. He showed against Philadelphia he can be an accurate passer as well. He obviously gives them a spark that Russell Wilson wasn't, you know, bringing to the table. And that defensive front is nasty. So the Giants are dangerous. I don't know that they're as good as the other teams, but they're definitely capable of scaring some teams, and particularly, you know, if Jackson Dart plays well, they become very difficult to beat.
Who wins the AFC North?
It's a good question. I still think, I mean, they've only ever been narrow outsiders for that division, even though they have one win. I still think there's a reasonable shot the Baltimore Ravens end up snatching that division by the end of it. I think Flacco might keep the Bengals alive deep into the season. You know, the Steelers should be the kind of, they've been the most competent team so far. But I think, you know, Baltimore plays four games against Cincinnati and Pittsburgh. If they sweep those games, they're basically level with, you know, the top of the division at that stage. And they have the best quarterback at this point with Lamar Jackson if he comes back 100%. So even if their defense remains an absolute disaster, Lamar Jackson, if he's playing the way we know he can play, would be enough, I think, to probably make them jump back at the top of that division by the end of it.
Sam Monson, check the mic with us on G&D here on The Fan. Heading over to the NFC North, maybe the most loaded talent division in the league. Give me a pecking order here. How does it shake out?
Yeah, I think it's kind of two and two. The Lions and the Packers. Detroit looks great again after an early season wobble. I feel like the Packers have more potential than they've shown so far, and haven't quite been able to put it all together consistently week in, week out. But I think those two are probably ahead of the other two teams. Minnesota, they might be a very good team if they could just find a quarterback, if they could just get one of those guys to play at that level. And then Chicago, I think, is a work in progress. They, you know, they're putting it together under Ben Johnson. They're trying to move in the right direction. Caleb Williams has shown flashes, and there's inconsistency there. But I think the long-term future could be very good. But I feel like those two are certainly behind the other two teams.
You mentioned finding quarterback production or play if you're Minnesota. So I was kind of the belief of saying, oh, of course, everyone's going to say, let's go trade for a quarterback. It's not that easy. But after watching what Flacco did for the Bengals last night, I'm not saying it's easy, but maybe they should have looked into that. I mean, Wentz is such a sack and a turnover waiting to happen. McCarthy really didn't look good before the injury. Do you think they should have been or should be in that market? Because, man, it feels like that defense and the personnel around quarterback, what a waste of a season if they're not a playoff team.
It is, yeah. I mean, part of the problem is that their offensive line has been absolutely wrecked all the way through the first few weeks of the season. They haven't yet had the starting five guys that they want to have this season available for any game yet this season, and at times they've had two or three of those guys missing. So that's a big part of the problem. Like, I don't think we have a fair evaluation yet on J.J. McCarthy because of what he was working with, what looked great on paper but wasn't actually out there with him for a couple of those games. You know, Carson Wentz was kind of a late veteran addition for this team who wasn't supposed to be the plan at quarterback either. The Joe Flacco thing, I think everyone's going to do a lot of kind of revisionist history and hindsight analysis. You know, we're a couple of weeks away from Flacco looking absolutely atrocious. And, you know, they benched him effectively for a third-round rookie, knowing that third-round rookie was going to have to go most of the season and then maybe turn it over to a fifth-round rookie. And they were fine with that because Joe Flacco had been playing that badly. So, obviously, now it looks like a terrible decision and Flacco looks great. But, you know, if you're Kevin O'Connell and the Vikings are crazy and you're looking around the NFL going like, well, who's the next Joe Flacco? By definition, you're sort of aiming at a incredibly long shot to pay off for you and do it coming in mid-season. And, you know, I think they still at some point want to go back to J.J. McCarthy.
AFC Championship, if you had to place a bet today, you either get to take the Bills and the Chiefs, or you get to take the field. What are you taking?
I mean, in these situations, I'm always taking the field, but that's definitely the most likely outcome at this point. The Chiefs, particularly if Rashee Rice makes the kind of difference that he's made for them in the past, I mean, they might look like the old vintage Chiefs very quickly, and then they become an absolute wagon for anybody to deal with. Buffalo, though, they've had, you know, a couple of wobbles, and maybe they do get knocked off by somebody again in the playoffs. There's definitely some live, you know, contenders in the AFC if and when the playoffs roll around. But, yeah, those look like the two best teams if you had to pick it right now.
We got a rare, excellent early morning London game this weekend shaping up. Maybe better matchup than game. I don't know. Puka Nacua is out. But the Rams and the Jags are both 4-2. We don't normally export these quality games, Sam, overseas, huh?
No, and when you do, they don't end up looking that way. Sometimes
yeah,
the games look good on paper, and then when they actually start playing in London, it's terrible somehow still. So, you know, let's not count the chickens before they hatch. Maybe it will still be a terrible game for the people in London. But, yeah, right now it looks like a pretty fun one. That Rams defense is really, really good up front. The Jags offensive line just got torn to ribbons last week by the Seahawks. So job one for them is trying to figure out how that doesn't happen a second week in a row. And then, yeah, the Rams offense will be pretty fun as well because they're going to have to pivot without Puka Nacua, who's on pace for like a million targets this season and a record-setting year.
Which young quarterback would you buy stock in right now in the NFL? We're in D.C. Obviously, Daniels was incredible last year. Right now it seems like everybody's on Drake May. There are other guys in this conversation, but of the young QBs in the league, whose ceiling do you like the best long-term?
Yeah, I mean, I think Jaden Daniels is by far the kind of the safest guaranteed star bet of that group. I mean, he looks like a future MVP at some point in the NFL. Drake May right now looks like he's putting himself into the same kind of category, but we're dealing with a much smaller sample size of him playing at that level. If he continues that, if he keeps cooking the way he has been the last couple of weeks, and this, you know, a couple of games turns into half a season, turns into a season, you know, then it's going to be really difficult to sort of, you know, at the end of this year, we might be talking about which one of those guys would you take number one in a redraft. But right now, I think you would comfortably say, you know, Jaden Daniels just has much more credit in the bank in that area.
Will Tampa Bay keep doing whatever this is, where they're trailing in games and Baker Mayfield makes a 3rd-and-15 scramble out of his tuchus to somehow, you know, win the game for them? Like, is this, how sustainable is what's happening here? Because they're beat up, and maybe if they get healthier, they can kind of keep going. But they're 5-1, tough test this weekend too.
Yeah, that's the thing. I think it probably isn't sustainable. I think they've been, I don't want to say they've been getting lucky or riding their luck, but they've been doing things that are very unsustainable. And if they had to do them, you know, through a 17-game schedule and into the playoffs, it would probably be too much at some point. But the point you made is they've been so banged up and they're going to get healthy. So I think the way they keep going is they just avoid being in those situations in the first place once they get some guys back. You know, this is a team that could be, you know, with a comfortable lead late in the fourth quarter instead of desperately trying to execute a comeback and make miracles happen on 3rd-and-14. I think that's the way the Bucs could keep this winning run going, is just by getting bodies back healthy. And they've gotten better on the offensive line. That was in a terrible spot earlier in the season with, you know, Tristan Wirfs down and the entire unit shuffled. That's in a better shape. They need to get the receiving core healthier, and, you know, Mike Evans has started to be on the way back. That'll help out. But yeah, they've been doing amazing things. It's been a huge thing for them to be winning these games when they speed up.
Excellent insight as always on the NFL. We're in week 7. We're closing in on the middle of the season, believe it or not. A lot is starting to be determined, and so it's good to have a nice inventory-taking conversation. Thanks for the time, Sam. We appreciate you.
Anytime. Take it easy.
Sam Monson from the 33rd team joining us on Grant and Danny here on The Fan.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
T-Mobile is more than the best network in the game. They're now the best network in America, according to the experts at Ookla Speed Test. So MLB fans are connected from home to home plate. With the most advanced 5G, the most towers, and a signal that goes farther than ever, you can keep up with your teams on the road, overseas, and even off the grid. For baseball fans, it's better over here.
Based on analysis by Ookla Speed Test Intelligence Data, 1H2025, compatible device and plan required for T-Satellite. See details at T-Mobile.com.
You're tuned into Auto Intelligence, live from Auto Trader, where data, tools, and your preferences sync to make your car shopping smooth.
They're searching inventory.
Oh, yeah.
They find what you need.
They're going to find
it. You can make a budget for your wallet to help you succeed. Pricing's precise and true.
So true.
It's smarter car shopping.
Ooh.
Just for you.
Oh, it's just for you.
Ooh.
Find your next ride at autotrader.com. Powered by Auto Intelligence.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Whatever happens today, take it on with a fresh cup of True Brew coffee. Now only $1 with True Rewards.
True North Store's True Brew Coffee is a hot, flavorful gourmet blend created from coffee beans from around the world. As a free True Rewards member, pick the size that is perfect for you and pay only $1. Don't have the True Rewards mobile app? Find it in the Apple or Google Play Store to download and save instantly. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.